Welcome to the Insurance Huddle, hosted by me, Dr. John Wales. This is the place to be for insurance brokers, agents, and agencies, where we break down topics important to the insurance community with insights from industry experts. Welcome to the Insurance Huddle, the place to be for insurance brokers, agents, and agencies, where we break down topics important to the insurance community with insights from industry experts. Today's expert has over 3 years of experience in the commercial insurance space and has successfully assisted over 800 companies with their transportation and logistic insurance needs. And he loves helping entrepreneurs start and grow their new businesses. He is here today to help our agencies by giving us valuable insight into the transportation and logistics industry. I would like to welcome to the huddle the man with a plan and logistics insurance specialist, Stephen the Ritz Rissler.
Thank you so much for the warm introduction, John.
Steve, welcome to the podcast. Most of us agents, as we start driving, we want to write trucking and we want to get into it, but we don't know what we don't know. For our agents that want to get involved and really want to get into logistics, how can we get started?
The most important thing to start with is understanding the different types of risks that we're dealing with when we're talking to our customers. So the biggest piece to separate is, are you dealing with someone who needs their primary liability under their own authority, or are you dealing with someone who's going to ostensibly be driving under contract under the authority of someone else? And what I mean by that is, does this person have their own DOT number, or is their truck going to be leased up under the authority of somebody else's DOT number? Does that make sense?
It does, but how does that change insurance coverage?
Great question. So the insurance coverage that someone would need if they're simply leased onto someone else's authority is smaller in terms of cost and exposure, and so therefore it would require different underwriting on the behalf of the producer, and it's likely going to be a quicker sale.
So if I'm hauling under my own DOT number and my own authority, what coverage differences does it mean? Say eventually I'm hauling under my authority and I want to lease my department of transportation number to another owner operator or to a company driver. What are the differences in coverage? And again, I'm speaking from a position of pure ignorance here. I just want to understand the market and what coverages are aligned with what.
Sure. So first let's get into the smaller exposure piece. So what's called bobtail insurance or non-trucking liability. This is the coverage that most owner operators or contract carriers have in place to protect their financial interest in their investment in their own vehicle. So, you know, your physical damage, comp and collision coverage. And as far as the liability component, this is only going to be covering the vehicle during times when it's not operating under dispatch. So for someone who owns a Volvo VNL tractor, this could be when they're driving to and from the mechanic to get the vehicle serviced. This could be when they're driving to get the vehicle inspected or washed. It could also be when they're deadheading in between jobs. So dropped a load off in St. Louis, they're driving up to Chicago to pick up their second one. If this transitionary period is deadhead and there's no trailer attached, this would be a non-trucking liability exposure, and therefore they would need to have this coverage in place so that, God forbid, they're involved in a wreck on their way up to get that second trailer. Now they're not exposed because they have this non-trucking liability, this bobtail insurance in place. Whereas under their primary liability, they need that first dollar coverage. They need to have a policy in place that's going to pay out to make claims whole if someone's vehicle gets damaged or if someone gets personally injured in the process of actually carrying the trailer that's loaded.
Are you seeing a difference in the market on the way that they're treating bobtail versus underhaul coverage?
Absolutely. So the primary first dollar coverage is much more volatile in terms of its response to the economy. We've seen overall those costs have increased since the pandemic because the general interest and demand for the product is so much higher. There are more people getting on the road and starting new trucking companies today than there ever have been before in the past 5 years. And the bobtail insurance doesn't seem to be rising at the same rate whatsoever. And it actually doesn't seem to have a lot of sensitivity to motor vehicle score either. I have customers that come to me that have a spotty record as far as their driving performance, and we're able to get them into bobtail insurance policies at a reasonable rate. And yet it would be entirely impossible for them to afford a primary liability policy at this point.
And that does make some sense because you think about it, these trucks are designed to be underhaul. They're designed to be hauling your goods, and then the truckers themselves aren't making any money if there's nothing behind the cab. So I could see how they'd want to make sure that, they have as much coverage and that the policies are more thorough when they're hauling under load than when they're bobtailing around town. Does the policies that you generally write, does that include cargo as well?
Yes, for first dollar coverage it would. And there's a little bit more to that as well, John. When a carrier has active motor carrier authority with the Department of Transportation, in order for that to happen, it means they have liability insurance in place with FMCSA that they've reported to FMCSA. And if there is a loss or a claim while that company is running, then DOT knows exactly how they're going to have that loss recovered against because there's a policy on file. So, to your question, the cargo insurance would only be a concern for customers that carry their first dollar coverage. As someone who's a secondary policy, bobtail policy, would already have the benefit of that cargo coverage from the person they're running up under. I might have got lost in the sauce there. Did that make sense?
That does make sense. And you mentioned earlier that there was some type of scoring system. What type of scoring systems are there, and what impact does that have under the rates that are charged?
There's a lot that's considered when someone is going to market looking for their motor carrier insurance. The two main pieces that FMCSA tracks right on the front page of a customer's snapshot page with them are the driver and vehicle inspections that that customer has had since the history of their operation. So, a vehicle inspection consists of several points where on a couple different levels, you're going to have a DOT safety officer that's going to walk the perimeter of the vehicle and examine its tires and lights and glass and safety features and fittings, as well as its inspections. There's a few different levels to that, but those are the two big pieces we're going to be looking at, are vehicle and driver inspections. For an insurance producer like ourselves, for people who are coming across these risks that have yet to have their motor carrier authority, we're going to see most often they have no inspections at all, and that's fine. Because that's better to have none than have failed ones.
What scores pertain to the driver? Are there any points on their licenses? Are there safety requirements? Does that vary by state? I mean, how is the driver's? I'm assuming the driver's score is pretty important, especially if he's walking into a truck. Because I can tell you, if I have more tickets on my license, my insurance is more expensive. And I would assume that that would translate into the transportation world too.
Oh, absolutely. So, yeah, I mean, these are professional drivers, so we want to have people in that role that have, a clean motor vehicle report. So, ideally, no moving violations, no pointed insurance claims, would mean that they would have a cheaper rate. You're going to see the best rates for drivers that have an in-state license and that are over the age of 25. So if you're quoting a risk in Indiana, you want the drivers to also be from Indiana. As it pertains to FMCSA and SAFER and scoring, we don't see as much of the individual driver violations play into what you're going to see on a company's DOT registration. But as far as commercial risk in general, always clean drivers are going to be better.
If I owned a trucking company, when I am hiring and recruiting for owner-operators, would the owner-operator scores that's calculating my risk, is that done at a fleet level or is that done at an individual level? So in other words, are they going to fleet average my driver's history or is it included just at the individual level?
It's really going to depend on the carrier that you're quoting with. The biggest market that I'm aware of, the biggest direct write market for commercial truck in the United States, is going to score them on the individual driver level.
So I would have to report a specific driver for a specific truck.
That's where things get a little tricky. So, on a scheduled auto policy, you wouldn't necessarily need to designate which driver is in which truck.
What is the difference between a scheduled auto policy and an unscheduled auto policy?
When we're dealing with customers that have active motor carrier authority, they generally are all scheduled auto. A scheduled auto policy is one where only the vehicles listed on the auto schedule by the serial number are the ones that are covered. There are other kinds of commercial auto liability coverage. I don't write a lot of them in the trucking space because in order to have active motor carrier authority, you must file an MCS 90 endorsement with DOT. And an MCS 90, by virtue of what it is a document that shows, hey, this vendor, this person has all the financial responsibility requirements met, and this financial responsibility that they're reporting to you covers 100% of their commercial vehicles they own or operate. So, to get back to your question, it would need to be scheduled auto in order to comply with that.
What I'm hearing, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that when you're underwriting a trucking risk, there are two risks that you're looking for. You're looking at the individual MVR reports for their individual driving history, and then you're also looking at the asset inspection, the CSA scores and safety scores on those trucks. Is that correct?
So we're going to be looking at the location of the risk. Is it a state that has a strong or a weak appetite for this particular kind of truck and hauling? We're going to be looking at what are they hauling and what kind of power unit are they using to haul it. And then I would say the driver is probably a latter consideration. It is important, but it's not as important in the way we're going to think about how we're going to market this risk.
And do you see when you're marketing that risk and you're writing that risk, is there a big difference depending on the geographic area that they're hauling in? In other words, if they're hauling in 11 Western or 13 Eastern or a 48 state, does that have an impact on the rating? Because I know you said that there's the preferred rate is quoting an in-state driver to an in-state risk. But what if that in-state risk is also delivering in 48 states?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Travel radius is always going to be a consideration. The broader the radius, you know, the bigger the risk, the more premium is going to be associated with that account. The location of the risk is also of paramount importance, and garaging is also very, very important. So I see a lot of customers in the Southeast, Florida, Georgia region paying absurd insurance premiums, getting quoted absurd insurance premiums. And then in the Northeast in general, also very expensive. The Midwest and the West, not so much. So location is going to matter quite a bit. You're going to see higher rated quotes in New Jersey, Florida, and Georgia than you are in Idaho, West Virginia, and Wyoming. You know, because it's all based on the loss history in that zip code.
And if I have an Idaho company, but I'm hauling a dedicated route to Florida, how is that rated?
It'll be rated based on the state where the vehicle will be registered. So in this instance, if you were registering your trucks in the state of Idaho, the policy would also be native to Idaho, and you would be likely to have an unlimited radius on your vehicle schedule. So you'd be subject to higher premiums than if you had in-state only. But relative to a risk that would be native to Florida, you're going to be paying pennies on the dollar. I see single truck haulers in Florida paying upwards of $30,000 a year for their insurance for like a $1 million policy with 100,000 in cargo, and a similar risk in Idaho might be paying something closer to 10,000.
So as a trucking owner, I would be better at opening up a facility in Idaho, making sure my dot and everything is in Idaho, and hauling an Idaho authority, and then running a dedicated run into Florida.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct.
That doesn't say much for the people in Florida trying to haul local.
No, it makes it a huge burden for them, but it's all the better if they have any family in a neighboring state or if they have any real estate prospects in a neighboring state. But all paperwork must be legitimate because these are federally reported policies, so they're under the highest level of scrutiny.
And it would be hard to put a P.O. box as a garaging location. So I'm assuming they all have their check and balances to make sure that we're not gaming the system. And you mentioned a $1 million coverage, and I've seen people go all the way, try and go down to the minimum of 750, depending on what state you're in. What do you prefer to write the state minimum coverages, or what are the advantages of just writing a limit that covers all the states?
Sure. I like to work with the customer to understand where they're at and what they really need most before I propose a solution. For 9 out of 10 of my clients, they're not in a position yet where they're going to be able to run a load this week. And so for the, those 9 out of 10 of them, it doesn't make sense for them to purchase the policy with $1 million in liability right out of the gate, because the down payment that they tender to us or to the carrier is going to be a percentage of whatever that total liability package is. So I do see a benefit in writing policies with the minimums required for the authority to be granted, purely for the out-of-pocket cost savings for the customer. And at the time when they're getting started, you know, they have entry fees to load boards they're paying. They have to put fuel in their vehicle, and we know the cost of fuel is rising. Many of them are renting their equipment, whether it's the truck and the trailer or just the trailer, and you know, there's expense associated with that as well. So in more or less an effort to kick the can down the road a little bit for the customer, we do see a lot of benefit in writing the minimum coverage to get the filing reported first and going back and adding the extras later. Because once you purchase the insurance, you know, the carrier is apt to report your MCS 90 to DOT the same day, which is a crucial part of them getting started. You know, they need to have that insurance on file with DOT. But just because they get the filing that day doesn't mean that their authority will go active that same day. It usually takes FMCSA anywhere from 3 to 5 days to give a customer the green light once they've received proof of insurance. So all that to say, you could either charge them an arm and a leg to get them started, and then they're going to be sitting waiting for 3 to 5 days anyway, or you could charge them just what they need to get started, and then, you know, when those 3 to 5 days comes, you can endorse the extra coverages later on.
So what would be the difference in premium for those 3 to 5 days? Say I'm down for 10 days. About what would be the cost for that 10 days? And then how many of your insureds do you see increase the coverage after they get their full authority?
Down payment-wise, savings is anywhere from $1,000 to $2,500, sometimes more, to go with the 750 versus a million with 100K in cargo. There's different variations of this as well. So if you're not a carrier that has active motor carrier authority, you're not apt to go leaving the state with a live load. So you wouldn't need to have an unlimited radius at the time of sale either. So there's a little bit more you can take off. Depending on the underwriters that you're working with and their flexibility to this method of selling. So yeah, I would say an upwards of $1,500 to $3,000 they could save on the down payment. And quite a few of them, I would say any of them that stay in business are going to come back, and they're going to add that extra coverage that they need, their $1 million limit, their 100K in cargo.
So most of the policies, you're saying, after they get going, when they get their first load, are they calling to increase the limits?
Yeah, absolutely.
So when I was insuring trucks, and this is why I'm very particular on limits, we had a truck crossing the 5 freeway on an overpass, hit the guide rail, fall off the overpass, and kill an entire family in a minivan. And ever since then, I became very cognizant of what limits that I was putting on the policy, because the loss on that ended up being almost $5 million. So I always lean on the side of caution. If you think that your driving would increase your risk, you need to make sure that you have limits that match that accordingly. Now, we're mentioning filings, and we're talking about various states and organizations. What are the common filing types, and what states are they good for? Like, if I file, like, What is an IFTA? What is a DOT? What is a CA number? And what do those do?
Sure. So as it pertains to the most common non-fleet risks that I work with, there are really only two that I run into often, and it's the MCS 90 and the State Form E filing. Both of these are all owned and operated vehicles filings. So it's a bond made with either the state or the federal government that, hey, these are all of the pieces of commercial equipment this customer is using in their business, or that they own commercially. So that would be what an MCS 90 is. In order to issue an MCS 90, the customer needs to meet the minimum federally required limits of liability as posted on their DOT Safer page. For most people, depending on the size of their vehicle, that's a $750,000 limit with a 500-mile radius. If they're hauling automobiles or they have a big rig, it could be $1 million limit. If they have a cargo van or a box truck, it could be a $300,000 limit.
And is that filing handled by the carrier, or do I as an agent need to arrange for that filing?
Great question. Both, in essence. So the carrier will be executing it, but us as the agents, you know, it's always incumbent upon us to take ownership of all of the tasks that we delegate to the carrier. So that, you know, we can request that the filing be done at the time of bind, but it is absolutely crucial that 100% of the policy matches 100% of the customer's licensing and insurance page with SAFER. And if it does not, the filing may not get ordered as you had planned. So it's something that, you know, the agent should always keep tabs on, put in their tickler system, and follow up with to see to it that that's been done.
And
because if it doesn't, it could cost, you know, the customer and you a substantial amount of time and money.
What is SAFER?
SAFER is it's a fun government acronym, Safety and Fitness Electronic Record System. It is FMCSA's website. It's a publicly accessible database for folks like you and myself to go and check out. A little bit of insurance information and business information about anyone whose DOT number you can see on their truck on the side of the road. You can pull it up at safer.fmcsa.dot.gov, and you can navigate to the snapshot page to start searching for your customers' businesses.
One of the things that I used to use as a marketing tool is I'd go into SAFER and I would pull out all the trucking risks within a certain area, and then I knew what their scores were. I knew that they had coverage in place, and I knew when the coverage expired. So that way, when I was marketing to them, I guarantee you that 60 days before their expiration, they started getting postcards from my insurance agency saying, hey, it's time to shop around.
Absolutely. And it's such a useful tool when prospecting for that reason. And if you have someone already in your sights, too, you can really decide, once you have a little more info, is this an opportunity I want to continue to pursue, or hey, maybe this someone would be better off while with somebody else for the time being.
What are some of the caveats that you can give us? Because a majority of agents that want to get in the trucking industry don't really understand the trucking risks that they're riding. It's such a specialized market, and we think that it's the same as insuring a personal car. Can you tell us how insuring a truck is not like insuring a personal car?
Yeah, of course. So the first thing would be, unless you're talking about a cargo van or a box truck, when you're dealing with tractors or pickups, which is quite a bit of the industry, there's always an implied second unit to be concerned with, and that would be the trailer. So one thing that makes trucking, and especially trucking with a towing capacity, different and unique from other business autos is that you have to be concerned with the liability that comes to the trailer as well. And these are extra questions we have to ask the customer during our discovery interview. Like, okay, so what kind of trailers are you going to be using? Do you own those trailers? There is a coverage that we use in commercial truck called trailer interchange insurance, and this applies to non-owned trailers that the customer could be using in the operations of their business. And we want to make sure that we're being sensitive and seeking that information out so that we're not leaving them exposed if they are using their customers' trailers. So Amazon, for instance, has one of the largest third-party freight brokerage businesses in the United States right now, and they are power-only loads. So customers that are contracted vendor with Amazon need to carry 50 grand worth of trailer replacement coverage to even qualify for their program.
If you were going through a prospect, what are some of the questions that we should be asking that prospect in order to write the policy correctly?
So my process is pretty regimented. I always want to know, what has you shopping? It's a great feeler question to see kind of the emotional temperature of the negotiation, see where they're at, or is their patience already blown from whatever your qualification process is. They'll really be forthcoming most of the time. So sometimes they'll say, I'm shopping because I need my authority. And then, as we were saying earlier, John, I'm going to go to that basic plan of what are the limits you need today. Is the truck actually going to be seeing the road today? If it is, maybe we need higher limits to the tragedy you espouse. We would want to be sensitive to that information. So we're going to try and dig these pieces out in the beginning with that what has you shopping question. Then what are we hauling? How far are we going? What are we hauling it with? Is it a truck? Is it a pickup truck, box truck, cargo van, sometimes personal vehicle? And then how soon do we need to have coverage in place? And then we also always want to find out right off the bat, are they currently insured, they're usually going to answer that question when you ask them what has them shopping today. But those are the things I'm going to try and find out right off the bat.
And during the interview process, what are the most common classes that you see applying for insurance through your agency?
Yeah, so right now through us, we have an astronomical amount of expediters. So most of these people are participating in Amazon's relay program. So they're smaller weight class trucking for hire, box trucks and cargo vans. I would say all fall into that category if they're hauling general freight. Then the second most common business class would be other for hire general freight. You can classify this a bunch of different ways, but that you're going to see that one for all of your long haul tractor risks. And the variation of that would be hotshot general freight. And that's the same idea as far as the cargo, but the power unit might be a pickup truck. So Ram 3500s, larger Silverados, F-350s. And those would be probably your three biggest, your general freight hauler for tractors, your auto hauler, general freight, hotshot, and then expediter.
Expediters used to be really big for FedEx. Those trucks would be hauling everywhere within their state, and they would load that up. And for you agents out there who don't know what an expediter is, imagine taking a half to a three quarter utility dry van trailer, and instead of having a fifth wheel, mounting that box directly on the frame. So it's like a juiced up box truck. It's one of the most interesting things you see on the road. That they have that packing down to an art where they can fill almost as much of a regular load into those expediters than they can through your regular long haul.
And that's proven to be the case. We've seen so many people get into that business because the barrier to entry to buy a tractor is what it is in today's market. So we're seeing that market has really exploded recently.
So do you see, depending on industry and the type of collateral that's out there, say we have a straight Class 8 tractor or an expediter or a sprinter van, do you see the rates changing on those based on the collateral values and availability of those trucks? Or do you see that the rates are pretty consistent?
No, it's not as sensitive as we might think. I have a customer in Illinois with a rather large towing operation, and this customer is regularly changing their vehicle schedule. And I remember this summer they wrote to me with a request to add one particular truck that was over $500,000 in value. And surprisingly, I mean, this is a towing risk. It isn't an expediter, as we were saying. But to your question, you know, this $535,000 tow truck had almost the same physical damage premium as one of their rigs. It was only worth $280,000. So it's almost, there's a diminishing returns effect, I guess, after you've gone up an order of magnitude or two. So I guess there's a difference, there's a colossal difference between a $6,000 truck and a $60,000 truck, but there's not that big of a difference between a quarter of a million and a half a million.
Thank you. That's good information. What advice could you give us if we're looking at, again, jumping into the trucking industry with both feet? What are some of the steps that we need to do? I mean, how do we plan on carrier access? Well, how do we market for it? And then, you know, how do we make sure that we're marketing for things that we can write?
Yeah, absolutely. So collect as much information as possible is always a good place to start. For customers, or for other agents, I should say, that have leads trickling in all sorts of different areas of industry, I would dedicate a specialist, if you have one, if you have the capacity to do that, to work on your trucking risks. As far as carriers, I would get yourself appointed with one that you can direct write the bulk of your risks. And those are the three that we were talking to, your general freight tractors, your general freight hotshotters of the pickup, and your expediters. I would recommend looking to see what Progressive's opportunity would look like in the agent's area and see if that's something they'd be interested in doing. And then I would say it's good to have a few wholesale contacts that you can shop your customers with for their renewal. And also, if it's a risk that you can't direct write with a bread and butter carrier, you're going to need to have some place you can go for these customers that want to do things like hazardous materials hauling or waste hauling, or really large, expensive foreign car hauling. Those can sometimes require excess cargo liability limits that you can't get through direct rate markets. So I would say those are the good places to start. Know what your leads are like and where you can send them. If you're seeing a lot of those are your bread and butter risks, get yourself appointed with a direct rate carrier where you can service the majority of those. And then you could take a look to see for submitting those other specialty risks.
Thank you. So what you're saying is, one, know the risk, make sure you have the market for it, and then how would you market to those individuals? How do you get into that industry? How do you get the leads in enough to be able to write that type of business and keep the lights on? Because as an agent, sometimes when you're going into trucking, you think, oh, great, it's a lot of money and profitable opportunity, but you start marketing and you realize that the leads out there aren't very consistent. They can be very, you know, wet or dry seasons. How do you take that into account?
This is a bit of a longer sales cycle than what some of my colleagues have informed me they experience in their general liability practices with other different kinds of risks. So because these down payments are large, and sometimes these are people looking to start their business, you could talk to somebody and they may take 6 weeks to pull the trigger on an offer. So I would say to agents looking to break into this space to be patient, be consistent, take notes after every sales call on what you liked and didn't like, what you thought made the risk a good fit and what you thought didn't, and then use that information every day when you're quoting your new prospects. I'd say having a process that allows you to be your own source of feedback is probably the most effective way to learn quickly.
When I started doing trucking, I needed to start hanging out where the truckers are. I started joining the state associations. I started advertising in the trade publications. I started talking with the actual truckers in order to develop a program for the trucks. It's just a big caveat, and don't make the same mistake I did. I went out there and marketed to a lot of people before I had my markets set up and my appointments set with the carriers. So what happened is I ended up bringing in a lot of leads that I didn't have the guns to write, and that caused a little bit of a headache.
That's a really, really cool experience to be sharing. Like any business that you want to grow to $10, $100 million, you have to let sales lead the way, and that's really where we have found success in our agency is we do market on Google for the majority of our inbound lead traffic. And a lot of what we do is bread and butter risk. So we kind of took a look at what was performing well and we doubled down on those efforts. We took a look at what wasn't performing well. So like leads in New York and California, for instance, and we have retracted some of our resources away from those. So maybe having an iterative game plan that allows for some trial and error and room for learning would be the best approach to someone beginning their marketing plan for trucking risks. Make it state specific if you can, because there's a lot of restrictions that you'll run into in California and New York, for instance, that you won't run into in some of the other southern states.
I also realize that the haul profiles make a difference, because produce truckers, they want, you know, during harvest season, that's when they want the coverage. Long haulers, they will write almost all year, but they will slow down the winter because they all hate driving in the snow. So it's interesting how each market will feed into your overall game plan, as long as you know when to advertise to what market.
Yes, and it's one of those things where any one given customer could be your best friend or your biggest pain in the neck, depending on the time of year. And so the more customers you could have, the better, and the more chances that you'll have some pleasant overlap instead of just compounding negative, you know, endorsements. Because more than anything, I've seen the volatility, even during one policy term. I mean, customers that enjoy a lot of success are going to be hiring people, they're going to be adding trucks, they're going to be adding drivers, and their premiums are going to be growing. And those are people that need a lot of hands-on support, because they're going to have some pretty big installments. And if they're not used to making these large insurance payments, they might need an agent's help in how exactly to do that.
Thank you very much, Steve. Do you have any parting word of wisdom for our agents? And then if our agents have any questions, how can they get a hold of you?
Stay curious would be the best thing I can say. I mean, you learn something new every day. You never should feel like you have it all figured out. And as soon as you do, it's when you're in the most trouble. I would, encourage anyone looking to write truck insurance to reach out to me or anyone else they know who does and share pointed questions and be open for the feedback. And just always keep your pen clicked and ready to, learn something new. Anyone that would like to get in touch with me, they can find me on LinkedIn. My name is Stephen, Stephen Ritzler, Ritz like the crackers, and then L-E-R. And I'd be happy to answer any questions anybody might have.
Thank you, Steve. I know trucking was one of the suggested topics, so we're thankful Steve's here to help us answer those. But remember, you can always visit our Facebook group and select topics that you would like to hear about so that we can help you grow your agency. Thank you very much, and welcome to the Insurance Huddle. That's it for this edition of the Insurance Huddle. We'll see you next time. In the meantime, be sure to check out our Facebook page and Medium blog, linked in the description box down below, for more great resources. This podcast has been brought to you by CoverWallet for Agents, the easiest way for insurance agents to quote, bind, and service their small business clients. All online and in minutes. Check us out at coverwalletforagents.com.